Morning.
Good morning.
Just give me a sec. So today we're starting a new series and we're looking at the idea of Sabbath. Over the next 4 weeks, we're going to look at four aspects of Sabbath: stop, rest, delight, and worship. Looking at them in that order because they flow from one to the next. Only when you stop would you be able to rest. When you rest, you will find you have time and energy to delight. And when you do that, when you delight, you'll find yourself worshipping God as the creator of everything you delight in. But it all has to begin with stopping, because you cannot get to resting, delighting, and worshipping unless you're prepared to stop and make time for them. As well as just talking about stop, as we start this series on Sabbath, I feel I need to address questions along the lines of, well, why should I Sabbath? Do I really need to stop, especially for a whole day each week? And there's a variety of answers I could give to that, and I will look at some of them, but I think there's no better answer to why we should stop and Sabbath than this, because God calls us to. So if you have any problems with what I'm saying, don't come to me, take it up with the big guy. You might be thinking, now, having said God calls us to Sabbath, I'd be going straight to the Ten Commandments. And we will get there, but I'm starting earlier in the Bible than that. As early as you can get, in fact, with Genesis 1. Because Ten Commandments is not the first mention of the Sabbath in the Bible. In Genesis 1 and 2, God blesses three things. In first chapter, verse 22, he blesses sea creatures and birds, saying, be fruitful and increase in number. In verse 28, he gives the same blessing to humans. Be fruitful and increase in number. The third blessing is then in Genesis 2, verses 2 and 3, where it says, by the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. There's a lot of amazing things listed in Genesis 1 and 2 that it tells us God creates. But only those three things God blesses. There are other things: light, stars, sky, sea, land. They're all amazing things, but none of them get blessed. Then animals and humans are blessed because they were created to go and be fruitful. And the Hebrew word used here for blessed is barak, which can also be translated as happy. Animals and humans are blessed to go and be fruitful, go and procreate and fill the world with happiness and joy. And that the Sabbath is then the other thing that is blessed tells me that's an important part of bringing this happiness and joy to the world. The Sabbath is blessed because it exists to be a blessing in our lives. It's woven right into the fabric of creation. And God doesn't just bless the Sabbath. He makes it holy, set apart. It's the only time the word holy is used anywhere in the first two chapters of Genesis. The first thing called holy in the whole Bible is the Sabbath, the day of rest. And it's the only one of the commandments we actually see in the creation story at all. From the very start, the Sabbath day is set apart as something special, something holy. Now, it tells us God rested on this day. Now, I won't go into the idea of resting on the Sabbath because that's Mark's job for next Sunday. But the Hebrew word used here for rested is Shabbat, the word from which we derive our word Sabbath. And when Shabbat is used as a verb, it's usually translated as rest, as it is there in Genesis 2. But the most literal translation of Shabbat is stop. God rested, but only because he stopped working. And although we translate that as rested, usually in the Bible, it means, it has the dual meaning of stopping as well. As I mentioned, the most well-known passage on the Sabbath is the fourth of the Ten Commandments in Exodus 20, verses 8 to 11. So let's have a look at that. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Now, a common belief amongst Christians is that, well, this is the Old Testament, this is the Old Covenant, and we're no longer under the law, so we don't have to Sabbath. And technically, I can't actually argue with that. We don't live under the law, we don't have to Sabbath, which is probably not what you're expecting me to say in a sermon starting a series on Sabbath. So why then have we chosen Sabbath to be part of our way of life? See, the truth is, because we live under grace and under law, none of our way of life is compulsory. Not the other leaders now might be thinking, don't say that. Don't tell them you don't have to do the way of life. We didn't spend all that time just for everyone to ignore it. But the fact is, because we're under grace and under law, nothing's compulsory. That's the reality we live in. We do not. Grace means you do not have to do or achieve anything. And the way of life is not about achievement, though. It's not designed to be about that. It's not a list where you tick off the ones you've done until you've got them all done and you can shout, "House, I've completed the way of life." It's not about that at all. It's about being with God. Every item on there is about trying to bring us closer into that relationship with God and then the outworking of that in our community. Don't have to do any of the things in the way of life to try and make God happy, because God loves you no matter what. Our way of life, it's a list of things that we've agreed as a community we want to do as part of being committed to God and being committed to our mission of being a habitation of God's presence within the community. Being under the new covenant, living under grace instead of the law, means that instead of following rules, our aim is simply to draw close to God and allow him to transform us. And that takes time with him. And to give him that time we need, that time he deserves, we need to stop. Also, I do find it strange that Christians use the new covenant and living under grace as a way to explain why, well, we don't really need to do with the bother with the Sabbath. But they don't do that for the other 9 commandments. I'm not hearing preachers say, we're free from the law, we're not bound by the 10 commandments, we can lie and steal and murder all we want. Most preachers, you'll hear them say, the 10 commandments are a minimum standard. They're not some like lofty ideal. They're just a basic minimum standard. And we see that if you look in Matthew 5 in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus says, while the law says, don't murder, don't commit adultery, we really need to be going much further and not holding anger or lust in our hearts. The 10 commandments are a minimum standard, except it seems for that one about the Sabbath, which just seems to be a little bit too much, so we'll ignore that one. But let's look at Jesus' attitude to the Sabbath in Mark chapter 2. I'm reading from verse 23. One Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and as his disciples walked along, they began to pick some heads of grain. The Pharisees said to him, "Look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath?" And my first thought reading this passage, before we even get to the actual Sabbath-related stuff, it's just the Pharisees, and that there they were looking to criticize Jesus and his disciples as they're out walking through the fields. You expect them to be there when Jesus is preaching to the crowds, but it seems now they were just following Jesus when he's walking around, maybe from one town to the next. Just following him wherever he goes, waiting for anything they can pick out. Ooh, they're doing that. See, we assume Jesus went into the desert alone at the start of his ministry, so he was prepared for what was to come. But it may have been because if he tried it later in the middle of his ministry, he would have been followed by a group of Pharisees watching what he was doing. See, in this story, the Pharisees are just there watching and waiting. They're like paparazzi without cameras, just waiting for any mistake. Like, sir, those guys were picking and eating grain on the Sabbath, being naughty. That one, Peter, he was doing it. And him, John. And him, one of the ones no one ever remembers the name, even two. Could you name all 12 if I asked you? Not sure I could. The disciples, they weren't breaking God's law. They were breaking the law of the Pharisees. God's law, you see, wasn't specific enough for the Pharisees, so they added to it. Or as they would have said, improved it. Their attitude was, look, God, you've got this great basic design for the laws. It's really good, but it just needs a bit of tweaking to get it spot on. But don't worry, we'll sort that for you. Nowhere in the Old Testament does it say, you shall not pick grain on the Sabbath. It says, you shall not do any work, which is a bit vague. What counts as work? That's something you're going to have to work out for yourself if you're going to start Sabbathing. So once again, we're under grace, not the law. There is no set of rules, as we see with Jesus. But for the Pharisees, defining what work was on the Sabbath, it couldn't be left to individuals. So they had to have their own addition to God's law, as he called the Mishnah. And that's what the disciples had broken. There they had lots of lists they put in there, like no picking grain or anything from a field on the Sabbath. Let's look at Jesus' response, now in verse 25. And he answered, have you never read what David did when he and his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar, the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for priests to eat. And he also gave some to his companions. In the story Jesus is talking about here, David was on the run from King Saul because Saul wanted to kill David. In one of the places David went to, he asked a priest for food. The priest only had this consecrated bread available, which was to only be eaten by priests. But the priest gave it to David and his companions because they needed food. They needed something to eat, and he saw that need was more important than the letter of the law. And that story isn't actually about the Sabbath, but that was the point Jesus was making. The spirit of the law is more important than the letter of the law. And the Pharisees, in writing all their detailed laws to make sure they were perfectly within them, had lost God's heart. And the original intention of the Pharisees was good. They wanted to be devout. They didn't want to break God's law. So just to be extra safe, they had all these detailed rules so there's clear barriers to stay within. God said, don't work on the Sabbath. So to make sure they didn't work, they defined exactly to the letter what work was, which apparently included picking grain, but didn't include snitching. And so Jesus finished with this in verses 27 and 28. Then he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. If it was a case of man was made for the Sabbath, we'd have to be talking about rules right now. I would be preaching a very different sermon, saying something like, you were made for the Sabbath, so once a week you have to do this, you have to stop doing all these things, and there'd be a PowerPoint up behind me with a list of forbidden things on the Sabbath, like picking grain. But I do not have to preach that sermon. Hallelujah. Because the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. We were not made for the Sabbath. The Sabbath was made for us. The Sabbath was made for you. So it's not about following a set of rules. It's about receiving a gift from God. God's not calling us to stop and take a Sabbath each week because it's the law and so we must. It's because as our Creator, he knows what's best for us. He knows that we need to stop, to refresh, to refuel, to revive ourselves. And that's why, you've already seen, God wove the Sabbath right into the fabric of creation. It's there because we need to stop regularly as part of our rhythm of life. And that's why it's important to have Sabbath in our way of life, so we can develop a rhythm to our lives with God. That's why we also have the daily office, so we're stopping every day as well as stopping on the, once during the week for the Sabbath. We see God wanted to instill this rhythm in the Israelites in Exodus 16. This is even before he's given them the Ten Commandments. The Israelites had just escaped from Egypt, and God had given them something to eat called manna. Look, in Exodus 16, I'm reading verses 4 and 5. Then the Lord said to Moses, I will rain down bread from heaven for you. These people are to go out each day and gather enough for that day. In this way, I will test them and see whether they will follow my instructions. On the sixth day, they are to prepare what they bring in, and that is to be twice as much as they gather on the other days. I will test them and see whether they will follow my instructions." Do you think they all follow God's instructions? Just imagine it. If you'd have been miraculously rescued from slavery by your God making a path through the middle of the sea, and he gave you a simple little instruction, like only gather enough food for one day, food that in itself is appearing miraculously, what do you think you'd do? Surely, if you can trust him enough to walk through a parted sea, you can trust him enough to just take one day's worth of food, because you believe he'll provide you with what you need every morning. Apparently not in the case of some of the Israelites, because they went out that first morning and went and did their weekly big shot. Then they wake up the next morning, and instead of going out to get fresh manna, they turn to what they collected yesterday, and it was full of maggots and smelled. So they learned the hard way not to go and collect, not to collect too much, and to go out every day. Then, the day before the Sabbath, they were told, collect double, because they're not to go and collect any manna on the Sabbath. And that manna didn't go off, and it lasted for 2 days. But there's still people out there on the Sabbath trying to collect manna. Because whether it came down to collecting too much one day or trying to collect on the Sabbath, it ultimately came down to a lack of trust. And it's a lack of trust in God that's seen so many Christians just fall into the pattern of this world, which says, well, you can't stop, you're going to fall behind. You've got to keep working because time is money. That's literally just the modern version of going out to collect manna on the Sabbath. See, our world, it's driven by desire. An achievement. Desire is a great motivator. So much of what we do comes down to our desires. Whether it's a desire in the moment, you really want something right now, to your longer term desires, where you get out of bed and go to work each morning because you desire having somewhere to live and food to eat and you need that money to pay the bills. But desire aimed in the wrong direction can have disastrous consequences as people strive after things that are not good for them. And even if your desires are good, an unfulfilled desire can end up devastating people. As it says in Proverbs 13:12, hope deferred makes the heart sick. As the theologian and philosopher Dallas Willard once wrote, desire is infinite partly because we were made by God, made for God, made to need God, and made to run on God. We can be satisfied only by the one who is infinite, eternal, and able to supply our needs. We are only at home in God. When we fall away from God, the desire for the infinite remains, but it is displaced upon things that will certainly lead to destruction. And people have worked out the power of desire, and they've basically used it to make money. The whole advertising industry is based on this. Every advert wants you to desire what they're selling. Whether you need it or not is irrelevant. In most cases, advertisers aren't trying to convince you that you need their product because they know you don't actually need it. They're just trying to make you really want it. This was summed up by an investment banker with Lehman Brothers called Paul Mazur nearly 100 years ago when he wrote in his book on American prosperity, any community that lives on staples has relatively few wants. The community that can be trained to desire change, to want new things, even before the old have been entirely consumed, yield a market to be measured more by desires than by needs. A man's desires can be developed so they will greatly overshadow his needs. And he said that nearly 100 years before the smartphone and trying to get a new one every 2 years. The preacher John Mark Comer puts it more succinctly. Our economy is literally built on people spending money they don't have on things they don't need. For most of history, most people aim to survive another day, just have enough food to live on. You had wealthy elites who could have whatever they desired, but for most people, life was just about having your basic needs met, but not anymore. It's not that long ago we were being told that the future would be a shorter work week because robots would be doing everything for us. We'd have so much leisure time we wouldn't know what to do with it. And yet, most people feel busier than ever. Instead of technology making things easier, it's made it easier to work at home. And while during the lockdowns there were advantages in that because it helped things continue which otherwise would have had to stop, it's led to a lot of pressure to be working when you're not in work. technology has also led us to have a lot more choice in many areas. And while choice sounds great, a lot of pressure comes with that from all the advertising that comes along with that choice and leaves people feeling they need to accumulate so many things and consume so much media just to keep up. That's why we now have the acronym FOMO, fear of missing out. That's why you find people binge-watching Netflix while reading social media on the phone, whilst also shopping on the laptop, trying to fulfill all of the desires at once, desires that have been planted in them by advertisers. There's now a term called hurry sickness, which is coined not by psychologists, but two cardiologists, because they notice so many of the heart patients suffering with these heart problems and suffering from what they called a harrying sense of time urgency. There's a variety of definitions of hurry sickness, but they all boil down to this state of just rushing around and trying to accomplish as much as possible in as little time as possible, causing a sense of urgency, and as a result, a massive increase in anxiety, which leads to sickness. Basically, we're all in such a rush to do everything that we make ourselves ill. Unsurprisingly, this is a largely Western disease. The activist Satish Kumar said, "It's a Western disease to make time finite and then to impose speed on all aspects of life." The theologian and philosopher Soren Kierkegaard once said, "Most men pursue pleasure with such breathless haste that they hurry past it." Sorry if it seems like a lot of quotes this morning, but when other people have already said it better than you can, I think it's better to credit them than just steal from them and pretend it's your own thoughts. Though I'm under grace, not the law, so I could have stolen it if I wanted to. Dallas Willard, who I quoted before, he was a mentor to the preacher John Ortberg. And John Ortberg tells a story of when he called Dallas Willard up and asked, "What do I need to do to be spiritually healthy?" And he says there was a long pause, following which Dallas Willard replied, "You must ruthlessly eliminate hurry from your life." And John Ortberg says he wrote that down and then said, "Yeah, that's a good one. Now, what else is there?" And I've never been sure how true that part of the story is and how much he just changed it for comic effect. But whatever the truth, Dallas Willard told him, there is nothing else. Nearly everyone is in a hurry. It's become a badge of pride to be busy in our society. And almost an admittance of failure if you're not busy. "Yeah, I'm not getting a lot on at the moment." "What's wrong with you?" It's even true in the church. We say things like, "Oh, the devil makes work for idle hands." Even though when Jesus faced the devil, he did it after 40 days of prayer and fasting rather than a time of intense ministry. And he seemed to do okay. In Deuteronomy 5, we find Moses repeating the Ten Commandments to a new generation. This is 40 years on from when the Ten Commandments were first given. And it's not a word-for-word repeat. In Exodus 20, Moses uses how God rested on the Sabbath, on the seventh day, as the reason for the Sabbath. But not in Deuteronomy 5. I'm reading verses 12 to 15. "Observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but on the seventh day is a Sabbath. The seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns, so that your male and female servants may rest as you do. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt, and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day." So why, instead of using the obvious reason of God resting on the seventh day, is Moses asking them to remember that they were slaves in Egypt? Well, this generation wouldn't have grown up in Egypt. They didn't experience slavery. That was their parents and grandparents. I think this reveals something about Sabbath that's relevant to us today. Sabbath is subversive. It stands against the desires of empire. In Egypt, the Israelites had to work relentlessly because they were slaves. And when they came out, the Sabbath brought stopping and resting into their culture in direct contrast and rebellion to the experience they had in Egypt. with this new generation of Israelites not having experienced slavery for themselves, they didn't have that first-hand understanding of this subversive nature of Sabbath, though. And so without being reminded of Egypt and where they came from, there'd be a risk of them forgetting that and losing the importance of Sabbath. We need that same reminder. We're not literally slaves, as the Israelites were, but in a world where time is money, busyness is a badge of honor, and hurry sickness is becoming the norm, we unwittingly become slaves to our culture. Being a Christian doesn't automatically make you less susceptible to being sucked into the wider culture. If you're not aware of what is going on in the culture around you, you'll just blend into it. And so we have to notice the culture we're living in and choose to live differently, to live by the values of the kingdom, not the values of the culture. God gave us the Sabbath to bring rhythm to our lives, a rhythm he established in creation. He instituted Sabbath with the Israelites in the desert to bring a rhythm to their lives which broke the pattern of how they lived in Egypt. And we need the same thing. We need Sabbath to break the pattern of living in this hurry sick culture by allowing us to stop and be with God. Stopping is an act of discipline and discipleship in a world led by desire. John Mark Comer says that in stopping for one day each week, we take ground in the war against hurry in our soul and our society. I think it may be especially important in this moment, not only because of our hurry sick world, but also because of what's happened during the pandemic. I think a lot of people have found that the rhythm of their lives has just completely changed because of the pandemic and maybe not gone back to what it was. For one thing, working from home has become more common and it blurs the lines between work and home, makes it harder to stop. I found this. Prior to the pandemic, I was getting into a good pattern, and then overnight teaching became about emailing students, which doesn't have a regular pattern to it. And I'm still trying to find my way back into that rhythm I had before. It's not easy to stop. The world doesn't want you to stop, but it's vital. So, I may not have convinced you to try taking a Sabbath yet, but if I haven't, I have to warn you. You're going to have to stop at some point. So choose to stop now while it's still your choice. Because if you refuse to stop, at some point circumstances will cause you to stop. And by that, I don't mean your cabinet coming and telling you it's time to resign. But remember, hurry sickness was coined by cardiologists because they were seeing the impact of our culture on the health of people's hearts. And stress has been shown to weaken your immune system, making you more vulnerable to all manner of diseases. It goes back to what we've been talking about in the last few weeks regarding your physical and emotional health and how they're linked. Taking a weekly Sabbath will improve both your physical and your emotional health. You can tick off three on the way of life with one thing. I've got another quote for you. I was going to say I had one last quote, but then I stuck another one in this morning, so it's not the last quote. Anyway, it's from the theologian Marva Dawn, and she said, "Intimacy with God cannot be rushed. We cannot enjoy the presence of God if we're always looking at our watches. That's why we need to stop." Remember our mission statement, to be a habitation of God's presence within the community. Presence of God can only inhabit us if we're prepared to stop and spend time with him. If we do that, it will impact you beyond the Sabbath. The intimacy you develop on the Sabbath will change your week. As Walter Brueggemann puts it, in what I promise is my final quote, "People who keep Sabbath live all 7 days differently." It's so easy to become busy looking to have our desires fulfilled by things that cannot satisfy us. And in that busyness, we fail to spend the time with God, who is the fulfillment of our desires. God's already been speaking to us this morning about bringing forth new things, about breaking chains, about replacing anxiety with peace. But we need to stop to make space for God in our lives if we want him to do those things. We need to stop so we can, as we'll see in the next few weeks, get to rest, to delight, and to worship. I'm going to close in prayer. thank you that you didn't make us for the Sabbath. You made the Sabbath for us. Yet another of the amazing gifts you've given us, Lord. I just want to apologize for the fact that I haven't, through most of my life, appreciated and used that gift. But now my eyes are open to what a gift it is, Lord. I pray you'd help me, and I pray you'd help all of us in this room find a way to do Sabbath in our lives, find the courage to stop, if that's what it needs in some cases, to find that time, that right day, just to say no. Rest and stopping and time with you is just more important than my work and anything else. And that as we do that, you'll just open our eyes more and more to who you are, and to how, as we do this, as we stop, that you can actually be working through us the other 6 days and actually making more impact than we can do alone in 7. Amen.